lost halfway down the list. It says, first thing is knowing and feeling loved, right? This is something that my dad said it was so important in how he affected, like, how he intended to train us. And I think it's he got better at it, especially the younger kids. I'm actually going to take off my headphones because I keep on hearing reverb. So he got better at it with the younger kids. So hierarchy, number one, knowing and feeling love. The second one is witnessing a healthy marriage. And this is something mom talked about a lot and dad tried to do a lot. But, you know, that everybody's got problems. And I'm glad that we see mom and dad's problems. That's kind of cool. But, like, I think the fact that mom and dad actually do have a really strong relationship affected our upbringing really well. The next one was consistency of discipline. That's something they claim to do and try to do and I think valued. And the next one is empowerment, which I don't think really happened. I think that was actually a lot of our frustration as kids, was that we didn't really feel empowered to do stuff. And they did a good job of not bloating our egos while disempowering us, which is like the common trend of our peers, is for everyone to be like, you are great, so you feel good about yourself, and then also not be able to do anything. So empowerment is actually saying, you can do it. Here's how you do it. Let me show you how to do it. And the last one was fun, which I don't think mom and dad really do fun for themselves in general. So, again, it's cool to see mom and dad growing. They're like, that's probably the coolest thing I see. It's like every 5 years or so I check in and I'm like, wow, they're better people now. This is cool. Anyway, actually, I have a going theory because mom and dad, I know that, okay, so of the four of us, Kevin has had the most contentious rocky relationship with our parents. I think Paul's had the most contentious relationship with our parents. But like, it's like, because their personalities are so different, it makes it hard to relate. And with dad being identical to Kevin, it made it awkward. In conversations with mom and dad, they both feel like they, because they saw that, they spent more time and effort attempting to care for Kevin than they did with the rest of us. And they actually make that claim. Right. Because of music. I mean, that's not true. I've had some really, really good conversations.
I've had a very few very meaningful conversations. I mean, there have been a few, and they have been really, really good. And maybe they're that much more precious because they're so few, but yeah, I've had a few. I mean, like, there was one time I've struggled with, I feel like, Ben, you got a lot more of the project time with dad than I did. And I like to imagine that, and dad said this before, not explicitly, but I like to imagine that he was like, all right, Paul knows what he's doing and I can just let him do his thing. And he knows, like, he's going to be fine. You know, like he's always said, I'm proud of you, Paul. And it's like, okay, that's great. I haven't seen that in how he spent his time, but maybe it's because he was like, all right, no, I really am. I think you're going to be fine and you don't need me to tell you what to do. You're going to do all right. And then, Ben, you've always kind of been directionless. I mean, that's not an insult, but it's just like, right, right. So dad was like, all right, I've got to help Ben, like, know what things he can do, right? And so he did a lot of stuff with you. And I don't know, that's kind of, I lost touch with the relationships after that point, but...
Well, they knew Kevin was a people person, and that also kind of makes sense. Like, I'm just going to spend time. We're going to do stuff.
Right.
He didn't train you to do things. He just spent a bunch of time with you.
Right.
Nothing was ever good enough to make them really excited. But they were very intentional about making sure that, like, hey... So I'm going to throw this in on the other side. I had a really good relationship with mom and dad, I felt like. I spent a lot of time talking to mom about whatever, and she would give me advice on everything. Because I'd bring all my problems to them, because I like talking things out. And, like, I asked dad what he was interested in. He actually does care about politics, and he loves ranting about things. And I get him seeming excited about, I don't know, about making a difference at church and... The old ladies that he'd go to the retirement home and care for them. And, like, I don't know. I feel like I saw all of these things because I spend a lot of active time trying to get it from them because I'm curious. They've progressively, and both of them, gotten much cooler as they got older, and I got more mature parents than you guys did. So I think that made a big difference. I am a little concerned about this conversation currently because we have throwing a tangent out to Paul and I have been having lots of conversations that are negative in nature because we're trying to live in the same house and that causes problems. Anyway, but we resolve to try and say positive things lest we embitter ourselves and our neighbors. And I think it is important, especially with close relationships, as even we're sitting here, we're not talking to mom and dad, that we spend time making sure we are not embittering ourselves against well-intentioned, righteous people. I don't know how to do that, but...
basically what you're saying is that if we can talk about things that we didn't like without being bitter, it says more than if we only say things that we do like.
No, I'm not saying that anything here was invaluable. I'm saying it being out of balance in conversation is important.
Okay, so here's something positive I wanted to say about something that Dad told me in a conversation. We were driving either to or from the airport, to or from going to college, and I was coming to terms with what I now, looking back on, think is probably some degree of social anxiety, which I think maybe all of us have to a greater or lesser extent, where it's like, where I feel like I don't know how to interact with people, that I feel like people don't give me cues that I can read. I feel like when I am trying to do something, no one's giving me the feedback I need to do it well, basically. And so it's part social anxiety, probably part just I feel like I have to appear very competent and skillful, which is also prideful. So anyway, there's a lot of complicated things involved there. But I was talking to Dad about it, or trying to, and it wasn't really working. I wasn't really communicating it very well. And I was asking him, like, how do I do this? Like, how do I interact with people so that they can help me? And he thought about it for a little while and he said, well, you just have to say these words. And these are words that I've said. This is what Dad was saying. These are words that I've said a lot, and it really helps people to open up to you. You just go up to them and you say, hey, I need your help. And that broke me. Like, that, I burst out in tears. Like, I was crying in the car. And I was just, it was really touching because it revealed to me the depth of my pride, where I was like, oh, I don't need anyone's help. And it revealed to me that Dad had so much humility, where he could just say that to anybody. He's like, I don't have anything to prove. I need your help. I can go to anyone and say, hey, I need your help. You know, that's why I'm here, right? I'm here to get your help. I need you. You're valuable to me. And so that was, I mean, like, that really touched me, and it changed me. And it took a long time for me to readjust the way I think about things to get to where I was comfortable saying to people, I need your help. And I probably don't say it nearly as often as I should. But it's the attitude of acknowledging that other people are important, I think. And also just the words, like, those are hard words to say, or at least they are for me. And yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, and there is an element of truth in that, right? Like, we are such on the far side of that, that it's hard to imagine that you could ask for too much help. It's hard to imagine that you could actually waste people's time by being around them, but it is possible, right? And I think, well, that's true, but it does become trolling at a certain point. My point is that well, you have to push it pretty far from where we are, right? But I think it is valuable to see that there is some value in the lesson. And maybe our parents both were on that far side and saw a lot of people on that far side where they couldn't do anything for themselves. Were not competent. They were not self-assured. They could never do anything without someone else telling them that it was okay to do it. And so they learned the lesson themselves. Okay, you know what? Asking for help is a sign of weakness. It's a sign of incompetence, and it's a sign of a lack of virtue of some kind. And so they were like, we need to, you know, be able to do this. Maybe it was mom mostly. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I feel that way too, by the way. Like, I don't want to waste people's time. That's the justification I use for all kinds of things. Like, even all the time. That comes up into my mind. That's a constant that is a constant recurring theme in my thought processes, is don't waste other people's time. Other people's time is valuable. You shouldn't waste it unless you really need them to answer something, unless you really need them to think about something, unless you really need their help with something, unless you, you know, like if you really can justify it, then interact with other people. But otherwise, don't interact with other people.
Yeah. Well, and there is also...
Yeah, I was about to say, like, what are we resolving to do out of this?
So there's also a degree to which I feel like it's not a problem, at least for me. Because for me, I really can be happy all by myself. Not, you know, like, not doing anything. So to me, and I think Mom is probably like this to a greater extent. I think she's a really super introvert. And I'm fairly introverted myself. And I feel like maybe for Mom and I both, we feel like we are being put upon if someone asks us to come over and hang out and then we're not doing anything and we're just sitting. It's like, we're just sitting here doing nothing. Why are you wasting my time? Right? Like it's a reciprocal thing. We feel the same way about other people asking us. And so we don't do that to other people. Cause like, well, why would I insult you by just having you come over and spend some time and then not try to accomplish anything. Right.
I don't think that's true, but
I have not learned that lesson yet. I can't say that I'm there with you guys. I think maybe the Sabbath is, I think that's a good acknowledgement, right? Where you're not working, right? And you're saying, all right, we are taking a rest from labor and now we are resting. Yeah, that's a good time to be with people. Well, I feel like there is a lot of, yes, at least in our culture, maybe not in this group, but there's a lot of feeling in our culture that the ideal is to do nothing.
Oh, okay. So I've been prepping myself for approximately 4 months, and now is the time.
Abort! Abort!
So Kevin and I had a very nasty conversation when I turned about 21 and a half. Right around there. And I was in a bad place. And I had met Justin. And Justin was one of the first people that I felt like was a really close friend to me. That wasn't Kevin's friend. It was my first friend. Like, real friend. I hang out with Josh and James sometimes, but we never really knew each other. And Justin wanted to know who I was. And, like, took the time and got to know me. And it was really a great experience. I'm still very grateful to Justin for a lot of things. But during that time, I became immediately resentful of a lot of Kevin and I's dynamic, which primarily had to do with the fact that I didn't stand up for myself, right? I mean, I only had Kevin's friends. I was a pity person. Ben and I are both INTPs. We hate being pitied. We also hate being pitied to the point that we hate pitying other people who don't mind. Right. I wouldn't... Yeah, no pity. So I told Kevin that I had no good memories from high school, and that line was, I still feel it lingers in the air whenever we're around. I don't know if that's true for Kevin. Kevin's a lot more forgiving than I am, but I have never forgiven myself for saying that to Kevin, because it's not true. I mean, maybe I felt it was true at that moment, but it was not true, because I do have good memories.
It quickly became not true.
Yes, I quickly remembered many good things from high school. And I think all that really happened was I... What's up? Oh, about not remembering things? Oh, yeah, that was another good conversation. That was a good memory, though. Anyway, yeah. So mostly it's just I'm sorry for saying that because it's not true. And I do have good memories. And most of our conflict had to do with me not standing up for myself and me not taking the initiative to make my own friends. Like, because we all had lackeys, and I was Kevin's lackey, and I resented being his lackey. And that's not really a problem, because Kevin didn't resent me for being his lackey. Like, it just wasn't the relationship I wanted, and I didn't make sure it was any different. And my wife is calling me. I gotta go real quick. Let me just step out.
Yeah, you've gotta get through the long winter. You can't eat all the supplies, or we'll all starve. Yeah, the...
All right, great.
Yeah, we've got the seed corn, but yes. I mean, we got to save that for spring. Yeah, there's a big cultural difference because, like, in our culture, in our mother's culture, to ask for food is kind of rude because it's saying, "Hey, I'm out of food. And I'm going to presume that you have enough food for us both. Like, I didn't prepare for this. I'm like a total slacker. I don't have what it needs. I'm not a terrible person. It's an admission of being a terrible person and presuming on someone else that they're going to take care of you out of the goodness of their heart. But like I remember going over to Deborah's house and walking there like at midnight or whatever. And I knock on the door. I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry, to be here, but I need, I was at the train station. I need a place to stay. And Deborah's mom was like, yeah, absolutely. Come on in. She was so flattered that I would come and ask. Right. Because they're like, everyone has enough. And that you would come and ask us for some of ours. You're saying that we have like the best. And that's great.
What if I don't want to like them?
Right. Right. Yeah. I've started stocking the fridge at work because I just have lunches and stuff. And then, and because I stock the fridge, like, I'm like, hey, Andy, do you want to, like, what can you eat? Do you want to have some food? And so, like, we've been eating lunch together just because, like, we both know that the fridge is stocked for both of us. And so we, eat lunch. And it's really neat, because it's the shared experience of preparing a meal and eating a meal. And then the boss comes in and he's like, I've always wanted to, like, have the stuff necessary to make lunch, but I've just never done it. And I'm like, well, have some of mine, this is our food. Right. And it's been really neat. I approve of it. Well, what Luke and I are doing it. I mean, like our families have the same food and that's cool. Yeah. We don't eat together very often. There's no schedule.
Wait, hold a second. We are recording.
No, we're only recording our side. You can say whatever you want. Only Luke and I are on record.
Oh.
Well, I'm so far behind on editing that maybe this will never see the light of day.
So the only person here who's surprised is Paul.
I did not know that, but I don't really believe it.
Because Deborah poured out her soul to Jen, who then came to me and said, oh my goodness, what do I do with all this? So I've known for a while. I was going to chime in to the contrary of both Travis and Kevin. So one is divorce is permissible over sexual infidelity. And I presume at this point, Deborah hasn't run off with another man. So I would say, don't give up on it. This is true.
That's true. Do not constrain them.
So what I would caution you against is saying, because you can say, I'm going to let it go in two ways. You can say like, okay, here's... I'm going to take my mic off again. How's that? Okay, so you could do it in two ways. You could say, here's where I'm standing. You can come to me, and I'll be over here if you need it, right? Which I'm fairly certain to every stereotypical female, of which Deborah shares many qualities, it means that you don't care anymore, and you've given up on them. And I say that because that's something that she has said to Jen, that Ben is just no longer willing to work things through with me anymore. Right. So you can draw the line and stand over here and say, okay, you know what? You can do what you want. And that's a very Spooner thing to do. I enjoy it when people do that because it gives me a lot of leniency. But people want to know that you care. So while you're doing that, if it's true that you want Deborah to be on your side of the line, don't forget to say that both explicitly and emotionally that, hey, Deborah, I'm over here. Here's the line. I want you over here.
I agree that you cannot give more than you have. I advise you. And encourage you and implore you to give all you have. No. To give present tense infinitive all you have. Not to have in the past tried. Yeah, give it. I know. Yeah. You can't give any more than that. But
don't stop giving that.
Be sure you don't give any less, right? Like, it's a very fine distinction, and it seems like it's not much. No. If they want to leave. Yeah, if she wants to leave and you are still in good conscience doing your benevolence, doing your due benevolence, right? With love, then yeah, you're free. You are that is what 1 Corinthians 7 says, right? You are not under bondage, you are free in that situation. Right. I think it's also important to require closure from her, right? No, it's not impossible. You must make it explicit, right? Yes, but you can give them deadlines and say, look, this is my timetable. If we have no communication on this topic after 30 days, after 20 days, after whatever, right? Like, you can make it explicit from your side. There you go.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure that is... I'm not sure that is a wise decision then.
Yeah, that makes me uncomfortable.
Like, if... there's guidance in the scripture. If you are divorced, you're not allowed to go back. Like... Well, no, no. That's if you get married again. I haven't looked into this because it's not something I think about very often. But I encourage you to look into... Yeah, I encourage you to look into it and figure out the 1 Corinthians 7.
Yeah. 1 Corinthians says it's different.
Well, again, that sucks. I take a little solace in the fact that you knew you were going to pick a rough road with Deborah for the purpose of practicing love. I think that would be weird, but very possible.
I feel like I feel like my relationship with Deborah has not changed for the past like 20 years. Yeah.
I mean, the only... Jen would also like that to be true. She said that explicitly. She's like,
"So, are you resolved moving forward to follow Paul's advice in one way or the other?"
Which Paul?
The Apostle Paul. In 1 Corinthians 7. "But is it important to you that you have a sexual relationship with a woman on an active basis? Is that necessary?" That's the advice. Like, Paul says, hey, if you can go without being married, if you can go without the sexual relationship, then that is great. But historically, you're saying historically, that has not been a winning strategy. It does run in the family, frustratingly. So, in that case, what kind of... woman are you looking for?
Ben, I would like Absolutely. To apologize.
If this is in the past, then and you are not feeling any emotional pain right now, then yeah, let's do this.
I was going to apologize on behalf... sympathetically, I'm so sorry that you have no one better to open up to than this group. I think what Ben wants is to not think about finding another woman right now, I think. So let's go on a tangent. Who wants to go on a tangent? Okay, tangent. I think that Ben and I need to construct a team that operates as one sort of super construct of entrepreneurialism. Where so, kind of. It is Triop, but it's not Paul. And we need to get... But Paul is still in the high heavens. Right, so the thing is, he's brought us Triop. Ben, you and I need to create Triop around us like an exoskeleton that we can pilot. But that exoskeleton is not Paul.
And fight Kaiju.
Yes. Yeah. Jen is really excited about this idea. She wants me to have an idea buddy who would encourage me to make things happen. As am I. Exactly. And we're going to sit there and we're going to generate practical ideas.
It's a grinding gyre of ideas.
It's going to...
A log jam.
Then we need a layer around that purifies it. It's the crucible. It's going to have people like Matthew Strawbridge in it who delight in destroying bad ideas. Then they will produce a molten magma of excellent ideas that they will pour into... molds. We'll need to have some moldable people. Sensors. No, that is the crucible. The crucible is going to be sensor people. Jen and Matthew Strawbridge. You know,
like, been saying, like, from the beginning of our conversation, how people who like doing the same thing over and over again, who don't want to figure things out, who want to just receive good ideas and act on them.
Yeah, I need to find those people. And then we can empower them, give them awesome things to do, while we go back and think of new things. Yes, I know what Scrum is.
I can do that. I can... It's only seven dimensional, and you can always reduce it to three dimensions. Okay, Travis, what I'm saying is I can do that for you, but you would not recognize it.
Okay.
Well, either it would look exactly like real life, or you would not recognize it.
So, Travis, there's a way to do this in a more abstract way that you are probably envisioning. It's called an idea map. It's a technique that's been used by lots of people. And you start with a 2D map. And when you run out of dimensions, learn Blender, and then you can move on. But if you get halfway through making the 2D map and you're like, dude, shit, this is boring, then it's not actually what you want to do. So I recommend you actually make an ID map. I'm saying he won't get through populating one dimension before he's going to be like, dude, I don't want to do this. It's already in my brain. Yeah, sure. But that's already in your brain.
Okay, so what you do, Travis, is you start by writing it down in an Excel spreadsheet or a Googled spreadsheet. You have all the rows are all the ideas and the columns are all the different dimensions, all the different axes, right? So you've got like an awesome column and a circle column and a square column and a triangle column, and the amount of that idea that it satisfies that column, the orthogonality of that idea to that column is represented by a number. And those numbers, you assign them because only you know that number, right? And so you start populating this thing and you give it as many columns as you need and you give it as many rows as you need. And the idea would be to populate every column for every row so that you have a complete mapping of all your ideas onto all these different axes. And once you've got enough of that where you're like, oh man, I really want to see what this looks like, then you give it to someone who knows how to turn that into 3D, like myself or Luke or whoever, or you figure it out yourself, and then you turn that into 3D. Because even Excel will do that. It'll make a 3D graph of any set of three columns, right? Do it. Nope. You've got the columns are the axes. So like one column would be X, one column would be Y, one column would be Z, one column would be awesome, one column would be how much I like this food, one column would be how this relates to the President of the United States and his sitting committee of advisors. One column would be, you know, whatever it is you're thinking about, whatever axes you have in your mind. Like each column is an axis. And then each row is an idea. So like on the left-hand side, maybe you put a column that's just the name of the idea. And you write the name of the idea there so that you can search for it later. No, you're amazing. See?
And that's actually quite easy to port into an n-dimensional map. So yeah, if you want to do that.
You do want to do that.
We're going to be hanging out in your brain.
Yes. Yes. And then each cell is the idea, how much that idea relates to that axis. So if you've got an awesome column and you've got like pigeons on the row and you're like, pigeons are not quite so awesome, I'm going to put like a 0.3 on pigeons. And then you're like, the new Star Wars movie was awesome, I'm going to put like a 5 or 20 in the new Star Wars movie column. No,
don't stop.
You don't want to, because that's where your brain is. Your brain is already there. Your consciousness is going to where your brain is. It's understanding yourself.
I was going to make you a prototype. Do you want me to? All right, I'm going to make a very simple, probably 5-dimensional array.
You can rotate it through n-dimensional space dynamically. You feel like you haven't shown all your work. You're not being entirely honest with people.
All right, I made you a spreadsheet. It has pigeons, Star Wars movie, Star Wars movies, JFK, and KFC. The columns are awesome, how much I want to eat it, brown, and babes.
There you go. Send it to the chat.
All right. Well.
So now you're going to write a book about why you feel you need to write a book.
Paul and I are playing with Legos, is what all the sound is.
I'm building a gavel so I can adjourn us when we're done. I did. I haven't filled it up yet, though. We could. I need people to send me sketches and ideas or links to pictures of what they think the inside of all the different rooms look like.
Oh, I missed the conversation last week. I'm assuming this was part of it.
Nope.
Travis, I sent you a link. Yeah.
That's kind of... Have you seen this before?
No.
Oh. I thought you had to say yes. Google spreadsheet. Yeah, I still got... I don't know if I still have the files, but it's easy to recreate. The Astral Clubhouse. I'm trying to send a link. Let's see. Hey, that's what we did when we were playing Jedi Knight. All we do is just run around in circles all the time. And force jump into the ceiling and kill ourselves. Let's see.
Yeah, I would feed pigeons. Dog park feeding pigeons. Actually, that's exactly how I met women when I was hanging out with Kevin. I just show up wherever Kevin was, and I was like, hey, are there babes here? Oh, yeah, there are. There are plenty. Right.
There you go. I sent a link.
Kevin just lived in my house.
Natural Plane Clubhouse. I need those. The red or the yellow is the day rooms, and the blue is the night rooms. Travis Brain. So here on the row, we're going to have Ben. Oh, am I allowed to edit this?
Share.
View only. You can only view this document.
Right. I'm going to fix that.
Request edit access.
No. Hold on a second. You can edit it now.
Boom.
Ben, you'd have to be pretending to read the GRE books.
There you go.
Hey.
I feel like instead of hanging out at the Astral Plane Clubhouse, we should hang out in the Witness Island because that place is way prettier. It's not ours, but it's a beautiful place. It's like going to Disneyland.
You can hang out in Disneyland
every day.
Ugh.
No?
No.
No? What's wrong with you guys? I would, if I could work from a laptop in Disneyland, absolutely. Yeah, that's fine. No, but it's beautiful.
Ben, you were never a little kid.
I don't think you missed much.
All right, I'm going to grab this for the practical again. Ben, building an exoskeleton of people to purify and implement our ideas so we can justify sitting around and making them all the time. We need to fund it, though. Well, that's the whole point. I'd rather become super rich by acting on our ideas. Yes.
Da 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 da. Okay, now do it.
Oh, that's not true. I only come up with ideas when I'm trying. Okay. Well, then don't quit your job.
You're always quitting your job.
Every time we talk to you.
No, every moment.
So, Ben, build an exoskeleton. Actually do it. Actually do it. I've already started calling people. I've made like 4 phone calls. I'm like, here's my plan. Are you interested in being part of this machine? That's okay. We only need like 0.5% of your ideas to be practical. 0.5% of your ideas have to be practical. That's it. Especially working
on
together.
Accident. You could probably get on accident that much. I already put up a post about the giant tower on top of Mount Rainier. Not practical.
Okay, good.
Not practical.
I thought
unless
you were posting that as an example of
unless
like,
we can get funding. Well, I mean, like, if you guys can figure out a way to get funding from the state of Washington.
Okay, so perfect. Getting rid of managers. However, you and I are not the right people to go out and sell that idea and implement and put on blah, 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 blah. Correct. In our own super exoskeleton. It's really hard to talk. Okay, let me build on that idea. Do you know what woofing is?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Ben, you're basically saying shut down businesses for money and then fill the warehouses with coal.
So this is the idea. You get together, you make ideas, you pass them back and forth, they give you better ideas, but that's as far as it goes right now. And we need to start implementing them because we have no way to check whether or not they're actually good ideas. Because we don't get that last step of feedback of implementation. Okay.
Okay, how about selling coal as a...
So that's building a implementation system.
Coal. Sell people coal. Not for burning, as a construction material. It's stone. No, you sell them coal as a construction... It's a hard stone. Like, bituminous coal is really hard. That's an actual engineering material, and that's actually useful. I'm saying, like, just like coal. Yeah.
Yeah, but in order to investigate that question requires a lot of equipment and time and expertise that I don't think any of us are interested in acquiring.
Can we get a graphene loom? Where's
Google search? 4 great ways to make graphene at home. I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You could make a better air conditioner. Yeah, yeah. Use it as a heat conductor.
Okay, so we have so many ideas. The problem isn't we need more ideas. The problem is we have no practical or reliable way to implement any of them. Considering all of our ideas, none of them have come to fruition. And I think that needs to stop.
Do it.
Okay, don't buy, Travis, don't buy the printer. Just make the 3D models.
Renting printers is really cheap.
No, you just have Shapeways do it. Shapeways is the cheapest place to get 3D prints anywhere in the world. They're online.
Yeah.
I use them all the time.
Exactly.
Do you have a 3D model? Do you have 3D modeling? Where's the 3D modeling? Silicone or silicon?
Wait, we...
Silicone. No. Nope. Like a custom? I think...
Well, that's a good tagline.
I'm just saying that from here in the high heavens, branding is not a reliable long-term plan.
Remember that XKCD thing about whether or not things are going to sell based on what engineers say? But anyway. So, D&D characters, Paul already has a commissions page. If Paul could maybe demonstrate that he can make characters, don't you have some goblins things or something?
Yeah.
That'll sell up on your commission page?
I think so.
If you can get them up your commission page, I can probably actually get you business making people's D&D characters by advertising on like Reddit or something like that.
Okay.
So that's something that might actually work, and we can branch out of the
MacBook. Okay, so I need some marketing help, because I want to rework my webpage to make it look not crap.
Steven Reynolds makes gorgeous things.
Okay. Ben had some ideas about, like, you were saying something about how I could make my webpage better. Make me a picture. There you go.
Maybe you could get a serious... Okay, Travis. Do you want to be part of the exoskeleton of producing awesome things? Okay. Paul just sent you a link to a website that he wants to make awesome. You claim that you can make things awesome and talk about how they can make them look cool, right? And, like, appealing. If... Great. Paul is asking for feedback on that website that's in the chat link.
Write me up an email. Send it to paul@tryapp.com.
Or your cerebral brain map. Paul will probably be the person to do that.
Oh, yeah, if you want it printed in 3D, that could be possible.
Ooh, printed in 3D with, like, negative space, like they do with the star maps?
Sure, yeah. Oh, you mean like a... No, Travis, you weren't listening to the instructions. Write me an email, send it to paul@tryapp.com. Write it all up, give me a report. Thank you. That's fine. You can, like, stream of consciousness. Perfect. Give me a stream of consciousness. I love it.
Yeah. Yes, I believe you do. 1, 2, okay, 3. I think the third winner is actually selling junk food to high school students.
You need a crucible.
Yeah, we don't have a crucible yet.
Okay, well, Travis is part of the crucible.
Right now, Travis is not functioning as a crucible.
Right now, Travis is the only functioning part of the crucible.
Travis right now is part of the idea bank.
No, he's the only one who's doing anything as far as a crucible.
Oh, like he's reviewing things?
Yeah.
D&D mega game. I have to go to sleep, guys. It's been super great.
All right. Adjourned.
But good night, guys. You can keep talking, but I gotta go. War games.